Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. If this is your first time, please make yourself comfortable as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I am grateful to have met and worked with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I want you to know that you all can do me a huge favor. Please check out some of our past shows at answersforthefamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests as well as these. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone that you know who can benefit from a particular show. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, my guest co-host today is Denise Klein. She is the executive director of Milestones Ranch Malibu, which is one of the nation's premier dual diagnosis treatment centers. Denise graduated from the University of North Dakota with a master's degree in social work in 1992. She is actively involved in developing dual diagnosing programs that benefit and support the entire family system. Now, assisting patients in creating an emotionally sober and recovery-centric lifestyle is one of Denise's passions. Her ongoing faith that people and family systems can grow and change, and a strong belief in solution-focused and strength-based modalities lie at the heart of her ongoing dedication and vision for Milestones Ranch Malibu. Denise, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Alan. I'm so grateful to be here.
Well, I am glad to have you here. And for those that don't know, I mean, I've been out to Milestones Ranch, and besides having been there myself, obviously I have spoken with many people within the industry, and I love what you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you so much. We are very proud of what we do at Milestones and just honored to be here today as part of the show.
All right. So now, before we bring on our guest, share a little bit about Milestones Ranch and what it's doing now that's new and different.
Well, thank you for that question. We've been around for almost 16 years now, and we've stayed very small by design. So we only treat 12 patients at a time, and we have over 40 staff for those patients, and we're on a beautiful ranch. And what we're doing that's really special right now is we have just entered into a collaboration with UCLA where they're going to be doing outcome studies because they basically want to know why our patients love our program so much and what we're doing that's so impactful.
You know, I love that, and I know more and more research is being brought in. And I think that it is something that will benefit the entire industry is the kind of research that allows us to put together the statistics that show what's working.
Exactly. And because we've stayed small by design, we're able to treat approximately 100 patients a year. So we're able to go back over the last 16 years, and basically we'll be looking at, you know, 1,600 patient cases and really looking at what works. And each year we do try to improve everything that we're doing and make changes that are significant. And so I think that these significant changes will show up in the research.
So if there's a family out there that would like to get more information, or a professional out there that's working with somebody that goes, I think I need to know more about it as well, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Absolutely. Look up www.milestonesranchmalibu.com. And we have a website filled with information and education in regard to what we're doing to help people and families.
Perfect. And they can get a hold of you that way as well?
Absolutely.
All right. So let's go a little bit into our topic. And I love the fact that you and I spoke about it. And there's so much synergy in regards to what you're doing as well as what our guest is, which I think is great. So, and for those out there that are watching or listening, so our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is The Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma. Release trauma from your body, find emotional balance, and connect with your inner wisdom. Our guest, Julie Brown Yao, PhD, is a psychologist with more than 30 years' experience in somatic and spiritual traditions. Her unique approach blends clinical experience, psychology, physical and subtle body energies, and spiritual perspectives in discussing and healing trauma. Julie is the Director of Education and Program Development at Compassionate Care ALS, where she incorporates her knowledge of somatic depth psychology, grief counseling, and contemplative illness and death. Julie is an author, speaker, and has a private practice in Laguna Beach, California. She also works on Skype worldwide, specifically dealing with developmental trauma. Julie, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Alan, thank you so much. It's lovely to be here.
Well, it's been my pleasure to learn a lot more about what it is that you're doing through the book and through just gaining more information that's out there in regards to you and how much trauma that we're really seeing out there now. So, but before we go into the book, tell us a little bit about your background in both psychological, somatic, and spiritual practices.
Well, I'll begin with my spiritual practice first, because that was the catalyst into the somatic and psychological realms that I work in. I began a meditation practice when I was about 15. My father was an Aikido master, and before we practiced, we would sit down and do some meditation. When I was 18 or 19, just a difficult time in life, and I wasn't sure where to go, really what I wanted to do. And I remembered this meditation practice, and so I began to sit again just on my own. And that really opened up a lot of spiritual avenues for me, I would say. But I got very interested in the body, because I would feel a lot of energies in the body, and it gave me an introduction to subtle energy. But it also got me very curious about the mind and how psychology works. So then I began to go to school and learn more about psychology, eventually getting a PhD. But my passion was really about the body, and that's why I got into trauma, really realizing that without the inclusion of the body, something was deeply missing.
So, you know, at what point did you decide that that you should write a book on the subject?
Well, I've been thinking about it for, you know, quite a few years. There's a number of books out there on trauma, but there wasn't really a book that was giving individuals information in layman terms. There's a lot of books out there that maybe are written for therapists. And what I wanted to do is to give people a little bit more information on what trauma is, because it's such a broad and vast area of knowledge and understanding. So I wanted to just offer a little bit more and give some exercises and some tools for people to be able to work with if they weren't able to get to a therapist for one reason or another.
You know, one of the things that I liked most about the book was that it focuses on a lot of things that many others don't, but especially that there are exercises that focus on breathing, gratitude, and compassion. And I thought that was so huge, and especially the breathing part, because I hadn't seen that before. And I'm somebody who has actually, you know, followed Wim Hof and his breathing methods. And I just think that's so positive that by putting all of those things together, that we're sort of putting people in the right frame of mind to be able to deal with whatever they're going through, be it trauma or anything else. What was your thoughts as you decided to put all of this together?
Well, I wanted to bring in as many exercises as I could possibly in the book without overwhelming people, that we could either work through the book one by one, or people could go through the book and find out where they are in the moment and then find an exercise that would help them. So if they're feeling a little shut down, as you mentioned, the breath exercises, there's some exercises in there working with the breath to help invigorate or energize the system a little bit, which can help people come out of this more shut down state. And then there's exercises if people are feeling more aroused. There's a lot of exercises that can help calm them. And then, of course, the exercises that you mentioned on compassion. I also put gratitude and loving kindness in there. They've been shown scientifically when we do these practices that you can shift your brain state. So if people are feeling overwhelmed or really upset, they can sit down and do these really simple practices and to bring themselves back into balance or closer to a sense of balance.
Dr. Yao, have you found any particular compassion exercise to be more deeply impactful?
No, it depends where people are. It's always individual. But I love to start people with the visualizations on compassion. Mm-hmm. And some people don't have a great visual screen. So you can just use any sense that you have, a feeling tone, an emotional tone, visual, imagining you can hear, and really imagining a compassionate being that you can resonate. And I talk about this in the book. You imagine connecting with this compassionate being, which will help to cultivate that compassion, that quality of compassion within yourself. But some of the other exercises on compassion are just repeating small phrases, which help develop compassion, the same in loving kindness. Drawn from the Buddhist tradition, we repeat three short phrases over and over again while resting in the heart center. Again, it just helps to bring a person back to a state of calmness, back to their heart, back to a more positive emotional state.
I love this. It sounds like you're really integrating the learning style of the particular patient as well. That's one thing that we've found to be so important at Milestones is always to keep in mind that people experience things differently, whether it's kinesthetically or auditorily or visually. And I look forward to getting a copy of the workbook for our patients as well. I'm very excited about what you're doing.
Great. Thank you so much. Yes, everybody's different in their capacities of experience, and so in the book, I wanted to include that. And I'm always looking for an organic process of healing as opposed to doing something step by step. And that's why I say the book is intended for people to look through, and then they can go to it anytime they feel that they need some kind of assistance or help to work with what's happening for them in the moment.
So, Julie, what I was going to say is obviously when you're working with a patient, you're not only dealing with the patient, but you're dealing with essentially the whole family of the people that they're having to deal with, as well as in some cases, if they have other professionals that they've worked with. So how do you bring together and get all of them sort of on board with the scientific, the psychological, and the spiritual perspectives of trauma and the symptoms as far as to get not only it to work together, but to get all of them to see how you bring these things together?
That's a great question. Typically, the way that I work, I usually just work with an individual. But because of the family dynamic, when the individual changes, the dynamic within the family is going to change. So I don't work with each individual, but the individual that I work with will always come back and tell me how the relationship, either with their spouse or with their children or with their parents, is beginning to change.
That makes sense. Denise, you had mentioned that there are some changes that you've done or things that you've enacted at Milestones that sort of mimic many of the things that Dr. Yao is doing. Share a little bit about some of the things that you guys have done that ties right into what she's doing.
I'd love to. About 5 years ago, we meet together as a team every week, and we talk about what's working and what we can do better. And one thing that we recognized is that Typically, when you're coming out of school, you're classically trained CBT therapist, DBT therapist, and a lot of the work that you're doing, Dr. Yao, isn't necessarily the training you get early on as a social worker or as a clinician. It's something that you have to seek out. And so what we decided to do was bring on an expert who's trained in hypnotherapy, NLP, and biofeedback. And so what's happening at Milestones, and that's why we're doing the outcome studies with UCLA, is we found that once we integrated these modalities into the client's programming, not only were they, you know, raving about it, but we were actually able to see our success rates go up significantly because people were able to get to the lack, loss, and limitation thoughts that you wouldn't be able to necessarily get to as a cognitive behaviorally trained therapist. And so what Joe Tabanella does is when the patient comes in, he's able to find out what that lack, loss, and limitation thought is, and through skin conductance, actually measure the amount of anxiety you have with that limiting belief system, and through constant exposure therapy, through the biofeedback 2 to 3 times a week, the client is able to get the skin conductance measured to see that, okay, my anxiety was at an 8 when I thought of dad leaving and slamming the door, but I didn't remember that he came in the back door. And so the body knows the score, right? That's stuck in the system. And so what he's able to do, and he can explain it much better than I can, is he's able to be able to go back to that psychic wound and keep replaying it so that their anxiety comes down. So by the time they leave treatment, they feel like they actually have skills and that feelings aren't facts and that they can move through this wave of emotion without using a substance or a behavior to bring the stress level down. So they actually have the tools. So what you've been doing for 30 years, we're actually integrating into the program and we're seeing some really incredible success. And so that's what.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, we're really hopeful to share this information and, you know, through our colleagues, get this out to the community so that more rehabs do integrate these modalities because that's what people are looking for. They really need skills to get through the limiting belief systems that are trapped from 0 to 10.
Oh, absolutely. And I also loved what you said about helping people move through the waves of emotion. I mean, that's one of the keys in healing trauma is to be able to feel our emotions. It's part of our human experience. Mm-hmm. But so often in the face of trauma, the emotion feels like it's too much. So it gets split off or shut down. And, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't just go away. Those emotions are probably underneath our conscious awareness, but they're still affecting us negatively. And we know with all the research now, it can negatively affect our health. There's been a lot of diseases that have been traced back to early trauma. But so, yes, helping people be able to feel the emotion in their body where they don't become overwhelmed so it can liberate, if you will, through them. Yeah, so when emotion comes, we can stay with it, stays however long it needs to, and then it's gone. And that allows us to stay much more present with our life and not limit ourselves to the experiences we're going to have, you know, because so often we become afraid of experiences because of what we may feel that feels too much.
That makes perfect sense. Now, in the book, you say that the book is not a substitute for therapy, which I would agree in most any situation like this. How do you suggest readers use the book to their best, you know, to their highest level of growth?
Again, it's going to be individual, but there's many exercises in the book that if people aren't suffering from extreme trauma symptoms, they can do. Like there's some letter writing suggested in the back of the book where people write a letter to their body or write a letter to their soul. And that's just a wonderful way to get more in touch with your body if that's something that you're looking for. It's a book that you could work with a friend or a partner or a small group. And you could also work with this book with a therapist if your therapist isn't so body-oriented. You know, a lot of people like to work with themselves at home, so they feel that a little bit more empowered with the work that they can do. And the book definitely offers this to them.
Right. And, you know, we have an instant message that came in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send in a message. I know we have many people, specifically we have a lot of teachers that tell us that they listen to the show, but they listen afterwards. So they'll listen, you know, tonight, either through iTunes or Stitcher or iHeartRadio or whichever network that they listen to. And then they'll send in a question, sometimes the night before, sometimes in the early morning. And again, I want everybody to know how much we appreciate it. Keep those coming in. This one reads, personally, I love workbooks. My shelf is full of self-help books that 90% are just overviews and not necessarily actionable things a person can actually do. I was hoping you might share a bit more on the specific exercises you recommend. And this is from Joyce in Utah.
Well, I can't recommend any exercises personally to you because I don't know your experience. But there's such a variety of exercises in there. There's visualization techniques, there's meditation techniques, as we said earlier, there's breathing techniques. But I also, after each exercise, I also encourage people to reflect and to become very curious. You know, curiosity is a really key term that we use in healing trauma, because it's that sense of curiosity that allows the prefrontal cortex to stay online, so it helps prevent us going into overwhelm when we're, you know, doing some inner exploration. There's just so many, such a variety. I can only suggest to go out maybe and have a look at the workbook and see for yourself.
You know, Julie, I think there's a way that we can maybe address it a little bit and do something else that I like to do, which is always ask the guest for one of their favorite success stories. So if you could tell us one of your favorite success stories, then you're going to be able to share with us a little bit about a particular condition and then which exercises worked best for them. I think we can cover two things at once. Does that work for you?
Okay, let me see what I can pull up here from my mind. One of my favorite stories was a gentleman that I worked with in his 70s, and he'd had very, very profound early trauma as an infant. He suffered from tremendous neglect, and he didn't get around to working on his trauma until he's 70. So even though he had a very successful, or seemingly outwardly successful life, inside there was a lot of disconnection, a lot of internal pain, a lot of suffering. And we began with a visualization technique of a compassionate being from a spiritual tradition that he was in that just came spontaneously to his mind as we were talking. So then we launched into this exercise, and it really got him connected a little bit more to his heart. That opened something up, and then we went into some much deeper and more blunt healing techniques and ways of being for him to get through that such severe neglect. Let me think what else. Other people I have worked with who, again, some highly functioning people I work with, but who have really been out of touch with their emotions. And often something like anger is a very frightening emotion for people to get in touch with. Underneath their conscious awareness, it usually is experienced as something that's very frightening. So in helping many individuals look at that anger and find ways to be with it so it's not so frightening, has been, you know, extraordinarily helpful for so many. So I have a variety of exercises in the group to begin to explore your relationship with trauma. First of all, we want to see, are you afraid of it? Are you able to experience it? Is it something that seems overwhelming? And then you can choose after that what may seem to be best for you to work with it.
You know, I
hope that helps.
Oh, it does. And I really like the fact that you brought up a trauma that is not one that people normally think of. In other words, you brought up one that he probably didn't remember because it was something from his childhood. And I think sometimes people forget that those can be incredibly serious traumas that they're not even aware of. But let's now touch on the other side of that. And what happens, you know, when a great impact creates the trauma, such as a car accident or another type of serious accident, creates the kind of trauma that most people initially think of. Share a little bit about what happens to us when those things occur.
There's a number of things that occur. First, in that initial impact, the traumatic impact, it feels too much, too quick, you know, very overwhelming for the body to be able to assimilate what just happened. So we overwhelm the capacity to cope or for the body to self-regulate. So the autonomic nervous system gets very overwhelmed. Maybe we get flooded with emotions that feel too much. And then we may begin to go into what's called a shutdown process or a process of dissociation, where we disconnect from the body and we disconnect from the emotions because we simply just feel far too much. And oftentimes there's this very high arousal charge that's in the body, that's an energy that would help us to fight our way to safety or run to safety. But oftentimes we can't utilize that energy, so it remains stuck in our system to a degree. And that can create all kinds of symptoms, you know, later on in life. It can be a few days later, it can be a few months, it can even be a few years later. So one of the tricky things about trauma, once symptoms begin to happen, it's not always obvious what the cause is. So I've worked with people who've had a car accident, for instance, who, you know, didn't have symptoms for months later. On the other hand, a way to get through something like this, I'll tell a short story about a girlfriend of mine. She witnessed a car accident. Well, it was a car who actually hit a gentleman on a bike. So it was a very frightening scene to witness. Fortunately, the gentleman on the bike wasn't hit too badly, but he was lying on the sidewalk after being hit by the car. My girlfriend witnessed it. She went over there. Obviously, a very, very frightening scene. There was some blood, and you know, it was very, very traumatic for her, as well as obviously the people involved. She called me later on, and she said, you know, Julie, I just feel numb. I feel frozen. I can't think properly. I feel confused. And this is often what happens after we have a shock. So it doesn't have to be a big impact, but the event itself has an impact on us. And so I just began to speak to her in a soothing voice and just asked her what she was noticing and told her to do some long exhales because I could feel she was holding her breath. And just by this nature of listening to my voice and connecting with me, she began to feel safe. So whenever there's a shock trauma, one of the first defenses we have to get to safety, if you will, would be to look for another, to try and connect to another, right? To look into another's eyes or hear another's voice for us to begin to feel safe, right? So that trauma doesn't get embedded in our system. If we can't do that, that's when we may want to call for help, or then we may want to run to safety or fight our way to safety. If that doesn't happen, if our body is experiencing that we can't do up any of those things, then we might go into this shutdown state. So my girlfriend was able to connect with me, and through that connection, she was able to calm. Her body began to shake, and then her breath became deeper and more spontaneous, and then she felt herself calming down, and her normal sense of mind came back online, if you will. I think I'm giving a lot of information trying to answer that question.
That's wonderful. That makes sense. I've got another tough question for you, but I would love to hear your thoughts on what does parental and grandparent trauma have to do with all of this? Do you think that there's any impact?
Oh, absolutely. So there's been so much research done over the last quite a number of years about intergenerational trauma. So we know that it gets passed from one generation to the next. And scientifically, it shows that we inherit from our parents the sequence of DNA that encodes the way that our body develops its unique characteristics. So the research shows that we can inherit trauma from both our grandparents and our parents if they have unresolved trauma.
And do you have specific assignments or activities in the workbook for this as well?
I talk a little bit about it in the workbook, but I don't go so deeply into it. What I'm doing in the workbook around this particular topic is introducing people to it. And there's a chart where people can map out maybe any traumas that they may be aware of that their, parents or grandparents went through. Because often we have something recurring in our life that makes no sense. That, we may, have language that makes no sense. And when we start looking at our parents' and grandparents' history, it begins to make a little bit more sense. And we recognize, oh, maybe this actually wasn't my trauma. Maybe this is coming from my parents. But there's another kind of intergenerational trauma that may be more pertinent to families who are listening. And this is the trauma that can be passed into us or transmitted into us through the gaze of a parent or a primary caregiver into the infant or child. So let's say, for instance, we have a parent who has unresolved trauma and they feel very depressed. And that may be a way of being that they just carry in the world. Well, if the mother or father is looking at the infant with eyes that are depressed, they're transmitting a certain something into that child. And, depressed eyes, or we could say angry eyes, or eyes that look very dissociated, feel quite threatening for an infant or a child. And so a child's body will then perceive some form of threat and begin to react to that threat in some level. So, developmental trauma, which I'm talking about now, isn't only about the terrible experiences that we all know happen, such as the many forms of abuse, or severe neglect, but it can be trauma that's transmitted from our parents through their way of being, through their eyes, through their tone of voice, that, isn't thought of so much, but it could have a profound impact on the child.
All right. We are talking about the Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma. Our guest is Dr. Julie Brown Yao. With me is also as guest co-host is Denise Klein. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We're talking with Dr. Julie Brown Yao, and our topic is the Body Awareness Workbook for Trauma. And right before we went to break, we were talking a little bit about parents and grandparents and how some of those traumas are passed down. Is there a special or unique trauma or type of trauma that parents with stress and anxiety have, And what can they do about that to stop the cycle?
Oh, that's a great question. Again, I can't speak to an individual or, you know, directly. So there's many different techniques that we can incorporate to help a person begin to be able to work with their anxiety. So connecting to the body is always suggested. Of course, the body is where trauma is stored, so the body can sometimes feel like a very frightening place to connect to. So in the beginning of the workbook, I always suggest to begin to cultivate a sense of safety in the body. And there's various ways we can do that. You may have another person that feels very safe to you. You may feel very safe in nature. And so you try and cultivate these experiences or look in your life where you have an experience where you may feel safe and begin to anchor that as a feeling, as a felt sense or a feeling tone in your body. And that begins to connect you to your body in a way that feels bearable, that is okay. And then once you can feel a little bit more connected to your body, then you can begin to feel a little bit more of those energies that anxiety begin to produce, or the feelings that anxiety begins to produce. So we don't want to disconnect more. We want to be able to feel more over time. So this is partly why I wrote the book, to help people get in contact with their body a little bit more. They said that's where trauma is stored. But it's not just about, hey, you know, get in touch with your body, get reconnected back to your body. There's many steps that we often have to do so. And I go through that in detail in the book. Safety, a sense of connection. We want to feel connected back to our body and then connecting to others. And then we want to develop boundaries around us. When people have gone through trauma, whether it's developmental trauma or shock or acute trauma, quite often boundaries are ruptured, our energetic boundaries. So I help people to cultivate, again, a sense of a strong boundary. And when people do that, they tend to feel more connected to their body and more connected to their self and safer connecting to themselves.
I can tell by your style that you must make your patients feel very safe. I'm wondering excuse me.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think that so important that the initial step always when I meet somebody is to cultivate that sense of safety. So I try and have even the environment that I work in, I try and have it conducive to a sense of softness and safety.
Yeah, I can feel that even in the interview. It's beautiful. I guess I have a question about shame. A lot of, you know, patients can arrive in residential treatment carrying a lot of shame. How do you deal with that?
Again, there's various ways to work with shame. From a body-oriented perspective, you know, shame tends to have this posture of curled shoulders and a sunken chest or heart and the head bowed down. Now, of course, not everybody who has shame is walking around like that, but I think people can have a sense of it within them. So one of the exercises that I offer in the book is to go into that posture just a little bit, never doing anything that feels too much, but just enough curiosity, just enough capacity to self-observe and to gently move into this feeling of shame or this posture of shame, to pause, observe it, and then to very slowly begin to unfurl or uncurl from that posture of shame, to give yourself the experience of coming up and out of shame. And then we come back up with it, a long spine, the shoulders are back, the heart is open, and people tend to do a nice big breath. And on that exhale, they feel more grounded and open and a little freer and connected to themselves. That's one aspect of shame. But we often feel shame and we continue to shame ourselves in a way. So shame often arises from developmental trauma, earlier childhood trauma, because when something in our environment fails us or goes wrong or feels threatening, a child blames themselves, that they really don't have another choice. If something bad is happening, the child blames themselves, and that often can initiate a sense of a feeling bad or a feeling shame. And that stays within their system and can last a lifetime, sadly, if we don't begin to inquire, do this inner exploration and of trauma and the many aspects of it. But yeah, shame is an awful feeling. I was just working with somebody last week, and they got in touch with this deep, deep sense of shame. And they said, gosh, it almost feels like not being here would be, meaning, you know, not alive would be better than feeling this. I mean, the person wasn't suicidal, but he said, this is how bad it feels. I'd rather not be here than to feel this. And that's why it's often, you know, good, suggested to be working with another person when we're touching into these really deep-rooted experiences that feel so awful. So you can feel connected with another, which helps us to feel a bit more safe, to be able to explore, you know, some of the worst feelings that can arise from trauma.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We have another listener question that has come in, and this one touches on another type of trauma that I think that we have all heard of, but not many actually have to go through it. This one reads, I served in Iraq during the invasion, which was a horrific experience. I returned home and have suffered with PTSD for years now. My friends and my family treat me as PTSD is something that counseling sessions and medications, you know, would resolve. I am still very much affected, but find myself masking my anxiety and depression with everyone around me. I read the reviews of your book on the Answers website and on Amazon, and it feels like something that might be helpful to me. Can you talk about any others you may have worked with similar conditions and how your work has helped them? And this is from Thomas in Alabama.
Yeah, thank you so much, Thomas. And I really feel for your experience. That can be so very lonely, I'm sure, and to have to mask what's going on with you from others can feel very isolating too. So I'm so sorry to hear that. I've worked with individuals who served in Iraq with some, you know, wonderful results for them. Again, it's finding ways in which we can cultivate, I'm going to go back to compassion, self-compassion, if possible. Compassion is so key in healing trauma. Finding other people, connecting other people who have some sense of understanding of what you may have been going through. I think it's really important to have people around you, even if it's just one other person, that can empathize or have compassion for you and understanding. And so there's some simple exercises in the book that go through compassion and loving kindness. So you have that connection to yourself, which can give you a little bit more strength as you begin this journey of healing. Because it's quite a courageous journey. And, you know, one of the things about trauma that I always tell people, which they may not want to hear, but I think it's important, is when we heal trauma, initially it's not always about feeling better. It's about feeling more. And then eventually we'll feel better. But as you say, there's depression and anxiety that you're unable to really stay with right now. So what's important in healing trauma is to develop the capacity to be able to feel a little bit of this anxiety so it can move out of you. And depression is quite often the depressing down of emotions that are just far too overwhelming to feel. So it's slowly over time, building the capacity to be able to feel those emotions a little bit at a time. We never get overwhelmed. And there's a lot of exercises in the book that would help you to do that. But I also suggest in a scenario like yours is to find another to work with as well. And if you can't get to a therapist for one reason or another, maybe a colleague or a friend, or maybe there's a community center nearby that can help veterans. But to really work with another to some degree. And then if you can't, just check out the book, check out some of the exercises, do what you can. And we're not looking for a great big leap of healing all at once. It's a slow progression initially. And then it builds that momentum over time as we get more in touch with the body, are able to feel more emotions, and are able to stay with the conflicts that are often inside us and begin to dismantle those. And then, of course, as Denise was speaking about earlier, begin to diminish some of those erroneous beliefs that we have that are so often involved in drama that also keep us very limited. So really, good luck to you.
You know, and Julie, the thought that came to mind for me was, and especially it says that he's in Alabama. I don't think he can fly out and see you in Laguna.
Okay.
But I know that you also have said that you set up things on Skype. So, I mean, would this be the type of situation in which somebody might be able to connect with you on Skype? And then, and maybe it evolves into a, you know, maybe there's a group therapy session for other veterans, and you know, and I can envision all of them sort of sitting around with your book, maybe going through exercises in a group session that somebody is running in other locations, but them still being able to connect with you through Skype. Does that sound like something you've either done or maybe something that should be being done?
I think more and more of that should be being done. Of course, I think our veterans need as much support as possible. But yes, I do work on Skype worldwide. So the option is to go to my website and you can write to me from there. I also offer webinars, which in this particular scenario, it could be helpful. At the very least, you get some more education about trauma and ways to heal and can ask questions. And then I do work with small groups online. So getting a small group together, I could always look at my availability to work with a group over time. And that can be really helpful also. And especially now that I have the workbook, it gives people something very tangible to hold on to and to carry. You know, so sort of connecting with this book is connecting to some form of hope and possibility for their future.
Yeah, and for those of you, if you would like the website is juliebrownyau.com, and Yau is spelt Y-A-U. Now, if you're driving out there, don't try to write this down, but you can go to the Answers for the Family site. We'll have all of that information on there. But again, it's juliebrownyau.com, and you can then gather a lot of different information, as well as you know, maybe when an upcoming webinar is or something that may be beneficial to you. All right.
Great. So thank you for that, Alan.
You're welcome. We're running just about out of time here. So if anybody else would like, if they would like to get more information, if they want to obtain a copy of the book, what is the best way for them to do that?
You can go on to Amazon.com and order a copy. I also believe my book is available at Barnes & Noble. New Harbinger is the publisher, so you can go onto their website and order a copy there. I also have a link on my website, my personal website, where you can order a copy too.
Before we wrap up, I have a couple of questions for you. Just two quick questions. How do you stay anchored in compassion? I know there's a lot of clinicians out there listening, so I think it's really important. You've been in the field 30 years to get your feedback on that. And then what is the biggest aha moment that you've had over 30 years in regard to trauma?
Okay. Now, I've done a lot of my own trauma work. I think that what makes me an effective trauma therapist. And the outcome, I believe, of healing trauma is compassion. Compassion for ourselves, compassion for others, but then compassion as a field of consciousness almost that we can sit in. So doing my own trauma work, as well as doing a lot of deep, you know, spiritual practices from beginning 30 years ago, helped me anchor and stay in a compassionate way of being. And some of the biggest aha moments. Nothing's coming to mind for myself right now.
Go ahead.
Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Go ahead. If you have one, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say for my patients, what often happens is they'll go, oh my gosh, like they have a moment of, it's not necessarily an aha, but more of a moment of awe. Like quite often people will say, I'm kind of in a state of awe that I've been living my life with all of this trauma below my conscious awareness and had no idea. And now that I'm aware of it and healing it, I'm so in awe of how limited my life is being. So even though it doesn't sound like a positive experience, it actually is. Because they see now from their life right now going forward, how much more expansive their life is going to be or has already become.
Well, Julie, I just want to acknowledge you and thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show, for putting together the book, and for being out there and helping people through sometimes a very, very dark time. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me, and thank you so much for sharing about my new group.
All right. And Denise, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you coming on as my guest co-host.
Oh, I'm honored. Thank you, Alan.
All right. And for everybody out there, please put us on your calendar to tune in next Monday when we will be joined by Kathy Burns to discuss her new book called Shelp, Finding Healing on Horseback in the Lower 48. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com, or you can subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, and now through iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people, and we greatly appreciate it. Next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.